Hey everyone, welcome to the Peter Attia Drive. I'm your host, Peter Attia. The Drive is a result of my hunger for optimizing performance, health, longevity, critical thinking, along with a few other obsessions along the way. I've spent the last several years working with some of the most successful, top-performing individuals in the world, and this podcast is my attempt to synthesize what I've learned along the way to help you live a higher quality, more fulfilling life. If you enjoy this podcast, you can find more information on today's episode and other topics at peterattiamd.com. Hey everybody, welcome to this week's episode of The Drive. I'd like to take a couple of minutes to talk about why we don't run ads on this podcast and why instead we've chosen to rely entirely on listener support. If you're listening to this, you probably already know, but the two things I care most about professionally are how to live longer and how to live better. I have a complete fascination and obsession with this topic. I practice it professionally, and I've seen firsthand how access to information is basically all people need to make better decisions and improve the quality of their lives. Curating and sharing this knowledge is not easy, and even before starting the podcast, that became clear to me. The sheer volume of material published in this space is overwhelming. I'm fortunate to have a great team that helps me continue learning and sharing this information with you. To take one example, our show notes are in a league of their own. In fact, we now have a full-time person that is dedicated to producing those, and the feedback has mirrored this. So all of this raises a natural question. How will we continue to fund the work necessary to support this? As you probably know, the tried and true way to do this is to sell ads. But after a lot of contemplation, that model just doesn't feel right to me for a few reasons. Now, the first and most important of these is trust. I'm not sure how you could trust me if I'm telling you about something when you know I'm being paid by the company that makes it to tell you about it. Another reason selling ads doesn't feel right to me is because I just know myself. I have a really hard time advocating for something that I'm not absolutely nuts for. So if I don't feel that way about something, I don't know how I can talk about it enthusiastically. So instead of selling ads, I've chosen to do what a handful of others have proved can work over time. And that is to create a subscriber support model for my audience. This keeps my relationship with you both simple and honest. If you value what I'm doing, you can become a member and support us at whatever level works for you. In exchange, you'll get the benefits above and beyond what's available for free. It's that simple. It's my goal to ensure that no matter what level you choose to support us at, you will get back more than you give. So, for example, members will receive full access to the exclusive show notes, including other things that we plan to build upon, such as the downloadable transcripts for each episode. These are useful beyond just the podcast, especially given the technical nature of many of our shows. Members also get exclusive access to listen to and participate in the regular Ask Me Anything episodes. That means asking questions directly into the AMA portal and also getting to hear these podcasts when they come out. Lastly, and this is something I'm really excited about, I want my supporters to get the best deals possible on the products that I love. And as I said, we're not taking ad dollars from anyone, but instead what I'd like to do is work with companies who make the products that I already love and would already talk about for free and have them pass savings on to you. Again, the podcast will remain free to all, but my hope is that many of you will find enough value in one, the podcast itself, and two, the additional content exclusive for members to support us at a level that makes sense for you. I want to thank you for taking a moment to listen to this. If you learn from and find value in the content I produce, please consider supporting us directly by signing up for a monthly subscription. This week, I had the pleasure of interviewing two people, Dr. Avram Blooming and Dr. Carol Tavris. And if Carol's name sounds familiar to you, it's because it should. I've spoken about her often, as she is the author of one of my absolute favorite books, Mistakes Were Made, But Not By Me. And if you haven't read it, I recommend you hit pause now, go and buy it, come back. Carol's a social psychologist and an overall great skeptic. Her collaborator in this project, which we'll get to, is Dr. Avram Blooming, who's a hematologist, medical oncologist, and an emeritus clinical professor at USC. He's also formerly a senior investigator at the National Cancer Institute. The book we discuss today is their most recent project, a book called Estrogen Matters, which, as its name suggests, is a book about hormones. In particular, it's a book about hormone replacement therapy in women. Now, I realize at this moment about half the people listening to this, i.e. those of you who are guys, are thinking, do I really need to listen to this episode? And the short answer is, I think you do. At the very least, if you know a woman or care about a woman, you should be listening to this episode. Why? Because in many ways, this topic has created as much confusion and generated as much bad information as any topic in medicine. And yes, I am including nutrition science, which is the absolute bottom of our understanding of science. And the sort of parallels between the story of HRT and the nutritional guidelines in the 70s and 80s is almost uncanny. And that comes across during this interview when Carol and Abram tell a story that I had either forgotten or didn't know. The book is written in, I think, a very clear way. And I do recommend that anyone who is interested in this topic, you know, not just take our word for it in this episode, but instead get the book and go through the references. I spent a lot of time utilizing my team to help prepare for this interview, because as familiar as I am with this topic, and I think I'm more familiar with this topic than most physicians, I still felt the volume of information was just so great that I wanted to make sure I had gone back and read all of the studies in preparation for this. And in many ways, I'm glad I did, because it allowed us to really get into some of the details here and hopefully do so in a way that isn't confusing for you, but rather at least opens the door to your thinking about this. This is a very polarizing topic. It is almost a religion. So you will see that there are people on both sides of this that are pure zealots. And unfortunately, that just makes it that much more difficult to sort of interpret the literature on this. But in the end, you will have to be the judge of this. It is certainly my view, and I don't hide that view anymore, that most women do benefit from being on postmenopausal hormone replacement therapy. But not all women do. And I think one of the challenges for physicians and patients alike is trying to stratify which patients will receive much more benefit than the risk that's posed to them. And of course, perhaps as importantly, identifying the patients for whom the risk is outweighed, or is disproportionate rather, to the benefits. The interview largely covers the subject material covered in their book, which is to say the history of hormone replacement therapy, the impetus for the Women's Health Initiative, a very serious critique of not just the initial publication, but the subsequent publications, and then a little bit of a deep dive into each of the clinical conditions for which hormone replacement therapy should at least be considered. And of course, I think the most important of these is in not just cardiovascular disease, which gets a lot of attention, but neurodegenerative disease. And I think Abram makes a very compelling case for that. So without further delay, here's my interview with Dr. Abram Blooming and Dr. Carol Tavris. Before we get to this week's episode, I want to remind everyone that one of the benefits of being a subscriber is a discount program that we've created. Now, the purpose of this was to take the money that companies have offered to pay for advertising and say, look, instead of doing that, I'd rather just talk about the companies that have products that I love and use without being paid to do so, and say, take that money that you would have given us in advertising and pass that on to discounts as listeners. So the first one's coming out this Wednesday. And if you're not a subscriber yet, that's okay. You've got plenty of time to sign up. Head on over to peteratiamd.com/subscribe, where you can have access to this discount and future discounts. And now let's get to this week's episode with Carol and Abram. Hey guys, thank you so much for making the trip down from LA today.
We're happy to do it.
This is one of the topics that I have been meaning to explore so deeply over the past 2 or 3 years through what was originally going to be a multi-part blog post and a number of other things. And there always was a reason not to do it. And then you and I spoke about a year ago, Carol, and I said, Carol, I'd love to interview you about Mistakes Were Made. And your response was, I can't talk about that book anymore. I'm so tired of it. All I want to do is think and, you know, think about this new thing that I'm really excited about, which is Estrogen Matters. And I must admit, I was embarrassed at that point to acknowledge I didn't realize you had been working on it, even though I had read the paper that you guys had written in 2009, which we were talking about a few minutes ago. So it was sort of an aha moment for me. And I was delighted because I thought, well, you're going to do a much better job than I would have done, you know, because you're going to put so much more work into it. So I guess for the listener that's not familiar with you, Carol, let's start with you, Carol. You're a psychologist.
Social psychologist.
Social psychologist. What's a social psychologist writing about estrogen for?
My lifelong interest has been in bringing good scientific research in psychology and medicine to public attention. And as you well know, this is an effort that is not always greeted with huzzas and cheers. And thank you ever so much for showing us that our beliefs are wrong and our time to be replaced. But it's my lifelong quest, and that's what I do. And that's, of course, what Mistakes Were Made, But Not By Me was about, why it is that people resist new information that is better to know, that is beneficial, that improves our knowledge. And that's been my life work. And as a social psychologist, I have always been interested in the barriers to critical thinking and the reasons that people do not accept information when it is in their best interest to do so. So knowing Avram Blooming for as many years as I have, we have discussed over the years how our shared interest, his in medicine and mine in psychology, reflect the same concerns. What happens when research calls into question some established belief that is widespread in our society?
You know, I know I've told you this before, but I'll repeat it, that Mistakes Were Made, But Not By Me is would certainly be on the list of the three books I have recommended and or gifted the most. And in fact, I remember reading it and just somehow finding out how to get a hold of you and just calling you and emailing you and inviting you over for dinner. It was, you must have thought that was the weirdest thing ever.
Not at all. I was very flattered and pleased, by the way. And by the way, this work on estrogen that Avram has so excited me about could be a chapter in that book.
It actually is, as are other things that we have discussed, for example, dietary recommendations and things like that, that I know you have contemplated going back on and thinking about that. So Avram, what about you? Tell us a little bit about your background, your training as a clinician, and why in particular this issue has become something that's resonated with you.
I'm a medical oncologist. I've spent over 50 years as a medical oncologist, and my reason for going into the field was to help people live as long and as well as possible. Enlisting them, helping to decide how best they should be treated. And breast cancer constitutes about 60% of my practice. And I've watched the progress in breast cancer, very happily noting how many people we now cure. And in fact, our early breast cancer now is about 90% curable. And I found that while I was making a lot of people better in terms of the cancer, I was making them